Welcome to Trial Lawyer View, a podcast for and about trial lawyers. We tell the stories about trial lawyers who go to battle every day in courtrooms throughout the United States for injury victims. This is about their stories and their practices. Trial Lawyer View is brought to you by Synergy Settlement Services. Synergy allows trial lawyers to focus on what they do best by handling the difficult issues that arise in settlement, like troublesome lien resolution issues, Medicare secondary payer compliance, government benefit preservation techniques, and complex settlement consulting. Without further delay, here's another episode of Trial Lawyer View with Mike Morse.
Welcome to the Trial Lawyer View podcast. Today, we're thrilled to have Mike Morse, the founder of Mike Morse Law Firm, the largest personal injury law firm in Michigan, as our guest. Since establishing his firm in 1995, Mike has grown it to encompass over 200 employees and has secured $1.5 billion for victims of auto, truck, and motorcycle accidents. His remarkable achievements have earned him numerous accolades, including being named one of America's most 50 influential trial lawyers and receiving multiple Golden Gavel Awards for his innovative commercials. In addition to his work at Mike Morse Law Firm, Mike is a best-selling author and the CEO of Fireproof Performance, where he shares his expertise on building successful law firms. His book, Fireproof, a five-step model to take your law firm from unpredictable to wildly profitable, has become a guide for legal professionals seeking to transform their practices. Today, we're going to explore the secrets of his practice and his law firm business philosophies contained in his Amazon best-selling book, Fireproof. Mike, welcome to Trial Lawyer View, and thank you for joining me today on the podcast.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
In doing my research for the podcast, I came across something about your past that I wanted to start the podcast and ask you about, that you had this plan to eventually practice with your dad, and I read about it, and it just touched me, and I was just curious in terms of how that all unfolded and whether that was a catalyst to you building this incredible law firm that you have today.
That's a good question. That's a good question. If it's connected, I've never been asked that. I mean, probably connected. So when I was in, I've always wanted to be a lawyer. I wanted to practice with my dad, my best friend, my hero, my mentor. Came back to Detroit for law school from where I went to college out west. Came home to study near him, be with him during law school because he loved the law. It was his passion. He loved being a lawyer. And during my first year final exams, I think I had taken two or three, he died at age 49. He was giving lectures to lawyers in Mexico when he died. And he, was healthy. Back in 1990, didn't have a ton of medical workup of the heart and everything, but dropped dead of a heart attack, basically. I questioned myself for about 10 minutes. Did I want to finish on law school? Yes, I did. He had previously gotten me a job at a personal injury firm before he died, friends of his who said, hey, take my kid on, teach him the ropes. They did. I worked there all summer. And then I finished law school, got my first job in law, in personal injury law, and I'm kind of still doing that 32 years later. Is my success or my firm tied to that? Some would argue yes. One of my best friends says that the most successful people he knows had some significant trauma in their childhood and in their lives. I think I see that too. So, and my mom even says, you wouldn't be who you are today if that bad shit didn't happen to you back then. So, I hope that answers your question. It's a good question. It's a hard thing to specifically say yes or no.
Well, you've been incredibly successful at, in the terms of how many clients you've served, 40,000 clients and $1.5 billion in recoveries. I mean, staggering numbers. What strategies or practices have been key in maintaining high client satisfaction and ensuring exceptional case outcomes that has resulted in that kind of growth?
Well, we believe, you know, we trained under Gina Wickman, who is my current business coach. We are going on 17 years. I've met with him every quarter for 17 years. Learned a lot from him. EOS is a wonderful tool. We took EOS and we molded it for law firms to make it just a little bit more specific, a little bit more robust, a little bit more hand-holding. Us lawyers are needy individuals, and sometimes we need more than a quarterly. And I thought that, you know, we outlined that in the book, in our journey, in our process, in the book Fireproof. And we are now coaching 60 law firms on how to do it our way, and they're all having wonderful success. And it really comes down to the processes and making sure that everybody's rowing in the same direction. It comes down to having a manager and integrator in your law firm that is fairly new. I've had one for 17 years, but when I first hired an outsider to run my law firm who wasn't a lawyer, I mean, people didn't get it. People thought it wasn't right. People questioned it. And it just always made sense to me. So I still have John here. John's still running the show. He's actually doing a coaching session today in Houston, big, big, big firm down there. And he loves teaching and he loves giving back. So, but with his guidance and his supervision and his management, we're able to make sure that the customer service is impeccable, that the files are getting full value, that the trials are being worked up appropriately. And it works like a fine watch. I mean, it's that tight and that good.
Is your COO?
Correct.
That idea, and I know you got into traction. I wanted to dig in a little bit about that as well. But the idea of running a law firm like a business is something that we've had other guests on the podcast talk about. And it's really something that resonates with me because we use traction and all the law firms that we work with, I see a variety of different models and the way they approach. And the most prevalent one, though, is treating a law firm as a law practice and not really treating it as a business with metrics and looking at how efficient and how profitably the firm is running to make sure that ultimately you serve your clients like you obviously do, which is why you've got this incredible practice and have this COO focused on that. What advice would you give to other law firms looking to scale their operations in terms of that? Because, you know, when we go in and consult and look, the amount of time that law firms spend, for example, doing what we do, it can amount to hundreds of thousands of dollars in costs that the law firm shouldn't be incurring, but nobody typically is looking at that. Now, you've got a COO who's looking at that. So I'm just curious how you manage your operations effectively while maintaining the standards for delivering on your client promises.
Well, John ensures it. And not only do I have John as my COO, I have a CFO who's watching the books and making sure that we're saving money where we need to, passing along the savings to our clients, making sure that everything's run appropriately. I think John's got 14 department heads under him. So, and I have one direct report, which makes my life really, really, really good. So I think, you know, we make sure that people are working in their sweet spots. We make sure that people are working in their unique ability, doing stuff that they love to do and are great at. And we have I have a client experience manager at my firm, a full-time, six-figure, big position. And all her job is to make sure my clients are happy. And if somebody calls and says, this person isn't calling me back, or I'm not happy about this, or I've been waiting too long for my check, she gets involved, she turns it around, She gets a 5-star review out of them. She keeps them happy. She has permission. She has a bank account to send cookies or anything she wants, flowers. She makes, you know, she's got, it's a full-time job to make sure my clients are happy. So that's one position out of 200, and I think we have 220, 230 employees right now. And it works. So we focus on what's important, and client satisfaction is very important. There's so many things that are important, but we have a lot of really great employees making sure that everything is running smoothly. And it's John's responsibility to make sure that all the trains are running on time and everything's working and everybody's rowing in the same direction. And he just does it. I mean, that's his job. Not my job, not my lawyer's job. Their job is to work up the cases and get the most money. But the business, there's a lot behind it. I mean, we're going to do $220, $30 million in settlements this year. So there's a lot of paperwork. There's a lot of checks. There's a lot of happy clients. There's a lot going on.
Well, and what you talked about, the right people in the right spots, you know, which is key part of traction is that component of it. I'm curious, you know, other than what you've already talked about, are there any specific changes or improvements that you've adopted over time because of your work with Geno and the traction model?
It's all because of that. I mean, everything stemmed from that. Before I met Geno, I was just a lawyer running around handling cases and doing the best I could. I had 25 employees when I hired Geno, and I implemented EOS perfectly and expertly, but it took 15 years. John came out a couple years after we hired Geno and took it and ran with it and made it our own. So we have different agendas and we have different pulses and meeting pulses, and our scorecard, as he calls it, is our Jumbotron, which has, you know, it's very robust. It's run by Power BI right now, and they are doing it for us, and as well as other law firms who want to really understand their metrics, really put their metrics put into perspective. You know, one thing I love the simplicity of EOS. But EOS, you talk to your coach 4 times a year. That's it. So you got to be really self-motivated. You got a great 8-hour day, and then you're running for 90 days without any help. We are there for our legal clients because we find that they need the accountability. They need us there more often. They need us there introducing them to vendors and other people who could help them. Where EOS is pretty much a hands-off system, which is perfect for the people who are self-motivated. Again, like I said earlier, lawyers seem to need more hand-holding than other businesses. We were able to do it without the hand-holding, but it took us a long time. I'm trying to shorten the life cycle for law firms so they can have some relief sooner than I had relief. I mean, we tweaked our Jumbotron we're still tweaking it. But, you know, to get it really, really good, it took years and years and years and years. So now we're offering firms to do it for them in a month. I mean, I set up this coaching business exactly how I would have wanted it 15, 16 years ago. And that's the idea behind it. Like, when you come into Fireproof, I'm going to save you years and years and years. You're going to start growing and scaling and putting your processes into place way earlier than I did. So if I had Fireproof 15, 16, 17 years ago, you know, I'd be even more far ahead than I am. And I'm pretty far ahead, but I'd be even more far ahead.
So is Fireproof kind of the melding of what you've learned in this, you know, journey that you've been on since bringing Geno onto your team as an advisor and your COO? Is Fireproof taking all of the things you've learned with the traction model and giving it to other law firms to help them accelerate more quickly and learn to have an eye on what's important? Because you mentioned that key metrics in the Jumbotron, which is something we have as well, because if you're not looking at those things and you really don't have a pulse on what's going on in your business.
100%. It's everything I've learned in the last 32 years to help law firms grow. A lot of it is EOS related, but it's also the other seminars, the other books, the other mentors, the other coaches I've had, all synthesized in a new program that we call Fireproof. And we are also lawyers coaching. So if you're a lawyer, you know, Gino never helped a lawyer before me. I don't even know if he ever took on another lawyer besides me. Other EOS coaches, of course, did. But we wanted to give people specifics. So we know the language. Gino doesn't know the first thing between a dog bite case and an auto case. And he'll admit it. He coaches every type of business. It doesn't matter. We do mostly, I think we're 98% law firms. A couple other types of businesses have snuck in because they like the book and they want our help. But it's just, we give you a leg up. And there's lots of good coaching companies out there, but most of them aren't lawyers, have never done a law firm. So we feel like we have a little bit of an edge in that area.
So I wanted to ask you some questions about your book, Fireproof, which is an Amazon bestseller, because I think that there's some things that we can dig into and help listeners understand. But I wanted to back up because I meant to ask you this at the beginning. And I know that you recently had a massive success in the courtroom, a $75 million verdict. And I'm curious, because I know you had said from what I read that this was a case that you took to trial yourself because you're very passionate about it. And I'm just curious about what emotions or what that brought up for you when you got that kind of result for your client, and given kind of where you are in your business journey. It just seemed interesting to me to ask you about that.
Well, I definitely shocked a lot of people. Guy who, doing this 32 years, I'm on every billboard in Detroit. I'm, you know, spent a lot of money on TV advertising. I really don't have business, people would say, trying cases at this stage of my life. Built a nice business. Why am I doing it? Why do I want the grief? Why do I want to work 12-hour days? I haven't tried a case in a lot of years. The case moved me. I like the family. I promised them that I would see it through. When it came time to trial, I said, I can do this. I'm going to try to do this. So I brushed the rust off, found my briefcase, found my suit, and went into trial, and in a four-day trial, managed to convince 8 people to award $75 million to this family who lost a 21-year-old under some pretty horrific circumstances. And it was very meaningful to the family. Justice was served. It was meaningful to me personally because of the justice, because of the point we're making in that case, because of my obvious personal success that I'm able to say, you know what, I can still try a case. I've signed on to another case before I hopped on this podcast. I was just had a 2-hour meeting about this next trial that I've already signed up for in September, which is a little bit nutso, but I'm going to do it. So it's just a new day. I mean, I tried 30, 40 trials, and then I took time off to grow my firm. That's kind of, it's grown and it's running on its own. And now I'm trying some cases and it feels pretty good.
Well, and helping some families that need it, which is an incredible feeling.
Doing that forever.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of what drives us here. And what I talk about with our team constantly is the opportunity and privilege we get to serve and help the injured parties and their families by making sure the net recovery is protected from these plans that are trying to take more than they should. So I love that, which is why I wanted to ask about it. But okay, so let's talk a little bit about Fireproof, the book. And you've got in that book strategies for building a successful law firm. And I'm curious about the core principles from Fireproof that have been instrumental in the growth and success of your law firm. How would you describe that?
Well, there's 5 chapters in the book, and you know, you start by figuring out if you're the visionary of your law firm or are you the integrator of the law firm. You can't really be both for long-term growth and success. So it's all laid out in the book, but it's basically, you know, I had to learn that I was a visionary and I shouldn't be doing anything else but being a visionary. and we go into, you know, we talk about advertising and marketing, that we coach people to find their inner Cherry Garcia rather than being like every other lawyer on the planet, being just vanilla boring ads, vanilla marketing. We try to coach people to find their specialness, their uniqueness. Kind of, we've done that here in Detroit, and it's worked, connecting with your community in a special way, in a different way. We teach people how to hire and train and retain people and how to set up core values and all of the things that you've done through EOS, but, you know, with a legal slant to it. We teach people to, you know, put, you know, we convince them to hire a coach because everybody needs a coach. I probably have five coaches right now on different aspects of my life. And, you know, I wholeheartedly believe in coaching. It's a major part of my success. And I think every person needs a coach for whatever, especially running your business. And it's not typical, but it's super important in my opinion. So those are some of the things that we talk about. I'm sure there's others I'm missing right now, but those are some of the ideas that we talk about.
Well, I'm going to try and double click on a few things that you said, but that last point about having the right coaches around you in terms of building a business, I know for me that's been incredibly helpful, because, you know, when you get mired in stuff that's going on within your company or your law practice, having that external view and someone that can look at it dispassionately and help you identify things that you're not seeing and just help you overall deal with the challenges of being, you know, the entrepreneur is, you can't even put a value on that, because, and the personal growth that comes from that. And that sort of was what I was going to ask you about next, because the chapter Know Thyself, I assume you're talking about there that question about, well, are you the visionary? Are you the integrator? And what are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? And how do you cover those in your business to make sure that you get to your final destination? Is that what it really is about?
For more or less, yes. I think people don't understand those terms. People are wearing both hats. I wore both hats for 15 years until I realized what a visionary was and that we're special people. Gino sent me a book called Driven. I don't know if I have it right here. Yep, I do. This is a book that really spoke to me for visionaries, that we have genetic gifts because we're visionaries, and it's 1% of the population. And it really taught me a lot on how to be and who I am. And when I try to do other stuff, it just doesn't work. And I'm really disciplined that I don't take on things that I can't do, that I don't like to do, that I'm not good at. And my team around me knows that. Like, they know, don't send me a long email because I'm not gonna read it. Don't expect me to read a 10-page contract. I have people who do that for me because I don't have the patience or the skill set to do that. I mean, it's just not my thing. And I get to work on my thing. And that's a really nice thing to understand. And you also understand the dynamic between the number one and the number two, the visionary and the integrator. They're equals. Neither one are better than the other. And you got to make sure your number two understands that, and your number one needs to understand that. You guys are equals. And John and I have that relationship. I don't think that I'm better than him, and he doesn't think he's better than me. John, as a typical integrator, is the tiebreaker at my firm. If him and I disagree or the team disagrees, he gets to make the call, because he's in the day-to-day. He gets to make the call what's right. Of course, the visionary always has veto power that I don't know if I've ever used, but that's there. A great book on that is Rocket Fuel, that Gino wrote, that John and I are featured in several times, as being a, as being one of the best, if not the best, duo that he's ever met. To this day, he tells us. So it's a really important relationship. Actually, we talked about it this week. We were on a podcast on Monday or Tuesday this week. Well, that might be our next book, talking about that relationship, because it's super important, what you're asking me about. And there's so many tentacles, and how to train, and how to find, and how to pay, and, you know, it, there's just so much there. John and I just aren't sure we want to write another book, but that could be the next book.
Well, Rocket Fuel is a good place for people to start if they really want to get to understand those. It's great. I wanted to ask you also about, in Fireproof, the hiring, firing, and paying, because it seems like, from what you've described about your firm, that you've taken great pains to make sure that you have the right positions created. For example, a person that it is their job to cultivate and make sure that clients are happy and you get the reviews, because that's such a powerful thing today on the internet, is those types of reviews. I'm just curious about what do you believe is essential for building strong and effective teams in a law firm that you can distill down from that chapter for anyone listening?
Well, every firm is different. So I get that all the time. When do I need to hire a CMO? When do I need to hire a CFO? When do I need to hire a COO? As soon as you can. I don't have a great answer for you, right? It's, every firm is in a different stage. If you have two people in your firm, you don't need anything. If you have 10 people, 15 people, and you're growing, when you can't handle it all, John said something interesting the other day on the podcast. He used to have all those hats on. So when we had 27 people, John had 10 hats on. And as we got bigger and bigger, he would hire somebody to replace him. So he was the CFO for a while. He hired a new CFO. He was the chief marketing officer. He hired that out. He was all of these things. He was our media buyer. He was doing anything that we needed. And then when that job turned into a full-time job, he hired somebody. And now they're here. So he kind of knows what they're doing. They know what they're doing better than he does, but he knows how to manage those people because he knows that job. He's had that job. It's like being a manager at a restaurant. They usually make the managers work all the stations so they know what they're doing and they know how to manage those people. That's kind of what John did.
So one of the other things that I noticed was talked about, which just was interesting the way it was put, run your business like your biggest case. And that idea of business operations being treated with the same level of seriousness that you might approach a high-stakes personal injury case, how do you suggest a law firm leader, whether, you know, whatever role they might be in leadership in a firm, use that mindset to enhance their firm's efficiency and profitability?
I like that analogy. We came up with it when we were writing the book. Like if I said to any lawyer, tell me about your biggest case, now or past, immediately a case comes up. How hard did you work on that case, Jason? They'll tell me that 15-hour days, months and months and months, laser focus, great result, trial work. And yet when it comes to running their business, I said, how much time do you spend on your business? How many hours a week are you with your whole team talking about all the things that are important? Never. You know, how many hours a week are you looking at your books? Are you looking at this? Are you looking at that? All the important things, evaluating your employees, looking at your numbers, very little. So it's interesting that on one case, they'll spend all this energy and time, but on their law firm, which is their baby for 40 or 50 years, they spend no time. Any lawyer will get that analogy really, really quick. And when we came up with it, it was like, that just makes sense. It makes guttural sense. And I think it still stands the time. I think when somebody reads that chapter, they're like, oh yeah, I need to spend more time running my business, working on my business, than handling cases. Most lawyers are running around like chickens with their head cut off, 1, 2, 3 employees, couple lawyers, a few hundred cases, and that's all they're ever gonna be. which is fine if that's what they want. But if they want to help more people and they want to grow and scale, they need to get out of their business. They need to work on their business, and it just makes sense. And the people who want to do it, get it and do it. And there's 90% don't, and they're going to stay the size they are. They're going to stay a little bit dysfunctional. But it works for a lot of people. They're going to make what they're making, which is great, whatever that is. But some people have bigger aspirations.
So you just identified something that I was going to ask about, which are common mistakes that you see law firms or law firm owners make based on your experiences with Fireproof and just firms that you've come in contact with and how to avoid best the pitfalls. So you just identified one, which is failing to ever work on the business and being caught on that hamster wheel. I'm just curious, are there any other common mistakes that you see law firms making that you think are relevant to this discussion?
I think not knowing their numbers. When I talk to 3-4 law firm owners a week, and I quiz them, and I know very soon, within about a minute, how well they know their business. You know, I'll say, you know, Jason, tell me your average fee. Oh, well, you know, it depends. I get big cases and small. All right, I go on to the next question. Tell me what percentage of the profit do you take home every year? Well, I didn't look at last year, but I know my numbers to the penny. And I could go on and on. I ask 5-6 questions until I realize that they don't know what they're talking about. They don't know what's your weekly goal? How many cases do you want to sign up a week? How'd you do last week? You should know those things. And because how do you know what to be working on? How do you know where the problems are? What's your goal for the year? What's your goal for your lawyers for the year? What's your goal for intake for the year? What's your goal for revenue for the year? What's your goal for total settlements for the year? How many trials do you want to try this year? There's 100 questions. Lawyers don't know those answers. They should. What else? I think, you know, working both sides of the business, visionary integrator, I see that all the time. You know, I'll say, who's your CMO? Me. Okay. Who's your CFO? Me. All the things, all the C's, they're everything. And how many cases do you have? 100. Are you still trying cases? Oh yeah, I tried 3 last year. You know, and what are your, you know, it's just obvious. They can't do everything. They shouldn't be doing everything. They wonder why they're stressed. They wonder why they're depressed. They wonder why they can't get home for dinner. It's pretty darn obvious. So we just help find those issues. We teach them how to delegate. Nobody knows how to delegate. Everybody's got too big of an ego to delegate. You gotta delegate. You can't be doing $25 an hour, $30 an hour work if you wanna make a lot of money. You gotta delegate that shit out and find people to delegate it to. So, I mean, there's probably 100 things I could go on and on about, but there's lots of things that the law firm owners are doing wrong. And they need to hire a coach. Doesn't have to be me. Go hire a coach to hold you accountable. Talk about your business. Set core values. Learn how to delegate. And it just, I keep seeing it work time and time and time again, hundreds of cases. And so I'm super convinced about it.
So you mentioned Power BI, which is something that we use for our dashboards and tracking key metrics. I'm curious what other technology solutions have you deployed in your practice that helps make sure that the firm delivers on its client service promises and supports the scalability and growth of the firm?
So we have proprietary programs that we've built on Salesforce. We have proprietary accounting software. We've built software to do our Fireproof stuff with our clients. Our Fireproof clients have access to most of that stuff. We have a training academy helping train our law firm clients that we allow our Fireproof clients to tap into. So a lot of it's just proprietary. I'm sure my team uses a lot of off-the-shelf software. I'm not privy to those to those, but you know, I have a robust IT department. I don't just have a guy, I have a several hundred thousand dollar a year professional who makes sure that my computers are safe, to make sure that we're not going to get hacked, to make sure that my lawyers are doing what they're supposed to be doing and everybody else is doing what they're supposed to be doing. So we spend a lot of money on technology and infrastructure and software, and it pays off.
So last question as we wrap up here, and this is really open-ended for you to talk about whatever you want, anything that maybe I failed to ask, but since the podcast is Trial Lawyer View, I always ask, what's your view as a trial lawyer?
Well, number one, you're never too old to try a case. Even if you haven't done it in 10 plus years. Two, I think I've already talked about the coaching enough, so I'm not going to say that. I think that lawyers, for some reason, don't know how to connect with their community. And I think that's one of the keys to becoming fireproof that I preach in our, we meet with our fireproof clients twice a year, once in Phoenix, once in Detroit. And I show them all the initiatives that we do at my law firm, you know, because most lawyers I know have a big heart. They went to law to help people. They're helping people making money, but they're not doing stuff for free. They're not taking on enough pro bono cases. They're not doing nice things for their community in a big enough way to make a difference. So, you know, a couple examples. This is all on my social media. And if anybody wants more information, they can email me at mike@855mikewins.com. I'm sure you could provide that. But we have a robust backpack program. We've given out over 310,000 backpacks stuffed with supplies to the kids of Detroit. I can't walk anywhere without somebody saying thank you. Since I've been talking about this to my fireproof clients and on podcasts like yours, people, I'm now, our Project Backpack program is in 18 states with 18 different law firms. I don't make a penny off that. I give them the deck for free on how to do it, because I want every kid in America to have a backpack if they need one. That's super exciting for me. I do two dog adoption events in my parking lot at the law firm. We call it Meet Your Best Friend at the Paw Firm. We do over 200 animals. We're doing one next week, and that's super exciting. We pay for free rides home on New Year's Eve. We take pro bono cases. We got a man out of prison who was serving a life sentence for a crime we didn't think he committed. My team got behind it. We got him out of prison, pro bono. The community hears about it. It's newsworthy. They like us, they respect us, they appreciate us. It comes from our hearts. It's not done to get cases. We don't track how many cases we get from that stuff. But I don't see lawyers around this country doing it. Some do, most don't. I don't know why. The lawyers I know have big hearts and are loving people. And I think that's my soapbox to preach, to take on a pro bono case, to give away backpacks, to, you know, do something cool in your community that nobody else is doing and make it really big. Don't do 400 backpacks, do 30,000 backpacks a year. And people will notice, and people will appreciate you. And then when some idiot Florida firm comes into your market to try to take away your cases that you've been working really hard on, you'll be fireproof. And nobody will call that firm. They will call you because they know you. They know what's in your heart. They know you connect with your community. They know you're part of your community and you've been there for 20, 30 years. And the stuff works because it's truthful and it's from your heart and it's not greedy. That's my two cents. That's my soapbox for the day.
That's great, because I assume that ties into your mission of helping people. At least I assume part of your mission at your firm is helping people, because that's what you do in their time of need. When something tragic or incredibly damaging has occurred, you guys get that chance to help bring justice to that family. But giving back to the community is aligned with all of that. So it just, that big circle, right?
100%.
So if any of our listeners are interested in learning more about Fireproof or the book, or want to talk to you about a case maybe that they've got in the Detroit area, since I'm here in Orlando, Florida, you know, some people might have cases there and not want to send them to the firm here locally. How's the best way to get in touch with you?
Email mike@855bikewins.com. I have a robust LinkedIn page, fireproofperformance.com, 855MikeWins on Instagram, Facebook. I hope to be accessible. If you need me, find me, shoot me an email. Happy to talk about cases, coaching, backpacks, how to do a dog adoption event, anything that your listeners need or want up here in the great state of Michigan, I'm happy to help.
Well, we'll make sure to include all of your contact information in the show notes from today's episode. Mike, love it. Thanks for joining me today on the podcast. Really appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me again.
Thank you for tuning in to Trial Lawyer View. We hope you enjoyed today's discussion and encourage you to tune in to our next episode for more helpful insights about your practice. This podcast is brought to you by Synergy Settlement Services. Visit synergysettlements.com to learn more about how we allow trial lawyers to focus on what they do best.